Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the NTRA Road to the Triple Crown conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Following the presentation, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, participants are asked to press star 1 to register for a question. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded, and it is now my pleasure to introduce your host, Mr. Jim Mulvihill. Please go ahead.
All right. Thank you, Angel, and welcome everyone to this week's Road to the Triple Crown teleconference. Today we'll preview the single most important afternoon of racing in advance of the Kentucky Derby, which is this Saturday with three 170-point Road to the Derby prep races. A top two finish in any of these stakes would essentially guarantee you a spot in the Derby starting gate, and a third place finish would get you there most years if you already have even a few points from earlier on the trail. The races we're talking about today are the Grade 1 $1 million Santa Anita Derby, the Grade 2 $750,000 Wood Memorial, and the Grade 2 $1 million Toyota Bluegrass, which, interestingly, has assembled the most accomplished field of the spring in its first running after being downgraded from a Grade 1. All three of these races are at a mile and an eighth. Later on, we're going to connect with Ian Wilkes, trainer of Bluegrass entrant McCracken, who's the top-rated three-year-old in the weekly NTRA media poll. And we'll talk to Doug O'Neill, who could have as many as four runners in the Santa Anita Derby. But first, we're delighted to be joined by Graham Motion, trainer of the Holy Bull winner Irish War Cry. He's got 10 Derby points thanks to that win in February, but last time out, he tired badly in a disappointing seventh-place effort in the Fountain of Youth. And Graham, of course, won the Kentucky Derby in 2011 with Animal Kingdom. Graham Motion, it's Jim Mulvihill from the NTRA here. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, hi, Jim. How are you?
I'm doing great. We appreciate you coming on, as always. Very excited to talk about Irish War Cry and see what we have here on Saturday. He came back to Fair Hill about, 8 days ago and had to work there on Sunday. So to start, maybe you can just give us your impressions of how he's done since the Fountain of Youth.
Yeah, so he came back here. He got back here a week ago yesterday and, really hasn't missed a bit beat since he's been here. He breezed on Sunday, which I might have done anyway, but we'd had some rain Friday, so the track was pretty wet Friday, Saturday. So he chose to breeze on Sunday. He had a pretty good work. I worked with an older horse, probably one of my best older horses. Really the reason for that was just because I wanted to ensure that he had a good work. So, I wish I could give everyone an explanation for why he ran so poorly last time. I'm not sure I can. I just hope he can bounce back from it.
Well, and sometimes there isn't an explanation. And one of the questions I had for you was, are people too quick to dismiss horses these days after just one subpar effort? I mean, Irish War Cry was the number one three-year-old in our poll after the Holy Bull. Right now he's out of the top 10 entirely. So when it comes to the media and handicappers, are we too quick to dismiss these young horses after just one bad start?
Well, I think it's probably the opposite. I think we're too quick to jump on that bandwagon, to be honest. I think there's so much attention now for the Triple Crown and the lead up to the Triple Crown, especially with social media the way it is, that a horse jumps out and wins a prep race and everybody kind of jumps on the bandwagon. And look, that's great for the sport. I think it's tremendous, the interest there is for it. It's very exciting. But certainly when you're on the backside of it, it's not so reassuring how quickly you can get dropped off. But look, he's got to come out and prove himself on Saturday. I mean, he's coming off a very disappointing effort after running two really big races. He ran big speed numbers and looked very genuine, but he definitely has to bounce back on Saturday.
Very good. Well, I'm going to step aside and let Angel the operator check and see what the media's got for you.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. If you'd like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, press star 1 to ask a question. We'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for questions. We'll go ahead with our first question from Ron Flatter of VSIN. Please go ahead.
Hi, Graham. Just let me ask the real simple question to hope see if there's a complicated answer. How would you regard this three-year-old crop?
I think it's very tough to say, Ron, right now. I mean, there have been some very impressive performance, but it seems like, by and large, everyone, a different horse has sort of won each prep. So I think the jury's still out. Todd's horse was extremely impressive on Saturday and ran very fast, ran a fast time. I thought the track was very different on Saturday than the day we ran in the Holy Bull, so it's a little bit hard to compare the times and the races. But, look, I think as the waters run deeper here in the next few weeks, we're going to sort out the men from the boys. But right now, I think the jury's out.
Just looking back on the Fountain of Youth, how much do you think having other speed in the race as compared to, say, the Holy Bull and Irish War Cry's previous races had something to do with the outcome of the race?
Yeah, I do think so. I mean, I was a little surprised that Joel chose to lay so close to the pace. You know, we kind of discussed that the thing I really wanted to do was get him to settle. Having said that, I'm not a big believer in telling these guys what to do. Joel is very good. As it was, he kind of lay head-to-head for the lead or just off the pace at some point. I would have preferred he'd come back off the pace. I think I would have learned a little bit more about my horse. But I certainly am not blaming Joel for the way he ran because, you know, he really ran an appalling race that day. So, but I'd like to think he's going to settle on Saturday, and if he's not going to settle, he's going to have a hard time competing in these races.
In fact, yeah, you just read my mind then. I mean, is that something that now you have to have him settle at this point, or else, you know, now your hand is tied?
Well, look, I think he proved that he couldn't handle it the other day when he was on the pace, and I think the time was probably a little deceptive. I think the track was very cuppy, and I think it probably ran pretty quick that day. If he's not going to be able to handle that, certainly he's going to have to settle, yes.
Okay. Thank you, Graham. Good luck. Safe travels.
Okay, Ron. Thank you.
We'll go ahead with our next question from Art Wilson of the Los Angeles Daily News. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hello, Graham. Excuse me if this question has already been asked, but having run in the Holy Bull and then the Fountain of Youth, what was your train of thought in skipping the Florida Derby and then coming to New York for the Wood?
Yeah, no, it's a fair question. It hasn't been asked. My main reasons were I didn't feel comfortable running him back in 4 weeks off of that performance in the Fountain of Youth. I'd already run him back in 4 weeks in the Holy Bull. And I just thought it wasn't doing justice to the horse to run and wheel him right back in the Florida Derby, which also, you know, had a chance to be one of the toughest preps being a Group 1. So I wanted to give him the extra week, and quite honestly, I wanted to get him home. I wanted to get him back to Fair Hill. I thought he'd be a bit more settled here, get him back into the environment that he's used to.
And my second question is, we haven't had a winner of the Wood win the Derby since Fusiachi Pegasus back in 2000. Is that, in your line of thinking, is that just happenstance, something that's just happened, or what's your theory on that?
Yeah, I think it's happenstance. I think it's just like we didn't have a Triple Crown winner. You know, everyone got nervous that it was never going to happen. But, you know, I think these things come around. I came out of the Wood with Toby's Corner, who would have been one of the favorites going into the Derby, and he got hurt Derby week. I was fortunate enough to win it with another horse, which I never would have imagined could have happened. But, look, I think it's just a matter of time before the right horse comes along and we'll win the Wood and the Derby.
Okay, thanks. Best of luck on Saturday.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Art.
Our next question comes from the line of John Preachy of HorseRaceInsider.com. Please go ahead, sir.
Good afternoon, Graham. Kind of a two-parter here. Yes, you said, he won't be effective unless, he learns how to settle at this level, which is true. But my question is, what do you think, I can't get that race as a two-year-old out of my head, you know, where he's coming from last. I mean, what do you think ultimately, maybe not for the Derby or not for Saturday, but ultimately his best game would be? I mean, is he a horse that maybe should be taken back and make one sustained late run? Is he a tactical kind of horse that at least you would hope he would be that? And in terms of getting him back home and back in an atmosphere which he's used to and which is certainly quiet and certainly going to be a lot more quiet than it's going to be 5 weeks from now. Do you have any concerns about the Derby atmosphere? I mean, you know, provided you get there and he comes back healthy and all the rest of it.
You know, by and large, this horse has been a very sensible horse to be around. And when he ran in the Woodman and when he ran in the Holy Bull, he was just a picture of composure. He took everything in his stride. And to be honest, he really didn't get that worked up before the Fountain of Youth. I definitely noticed him to be more wound up in the morning before he goes to the track, which is why I thought it would help him to be back here at Fair Hill. But he still remains basically a calm horse to train in the morning. I don't know why he's gotten to where he wants to be quite aggressive in the afternoon. The rest of the family haven't been like that. I've trained a lot of the family. So I think it's just something that he's at the moment. Sorry.
I should apologize. Is that maybe a function of freshness than his, you know, his overall attitude as an individual?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's freshness, and I think three-year-olds at this time of year change a lot. I mean, it amazes me when I take three-year-olds down to Florida in December, and when they come back in March and April, how different they are. He's a good-feeling colt. I mean, he's a strong, good-feeling three-year-old. But I'm not overly concerned about how he handles the day, but when it comes to racing, he just has to be able to switch off to a degree. And I think you just asked me where I envisioned him, you know, what his style would be. I mean, I would envision him being a horse that just wants to settle off the pace. I don't feel like somebody's got to take a hold of him and drag him back to last by any means. But he just needs to be able to settle off other speed horses.
Well, that gets it done. And good luck to you on Saturday. Have a safe trip, Graham.
Okay. Thank you very much, John.
And once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question, please press *1 on your telephone keypad. And we'll go ahead with our next question from Tom Jucha of the Sun Sentinel. Please go ahead.
Yeah, Graham, Jim mentioned at the top of the call that, you know, the Wood is 750, the others are all a million, the Wood lost its grade one. Was that even a consideration when you were mapping a plan for this horse?
No, honestly not. I mean, I just wanted to choose what was going to be the best prep for him, and the money really doesn't come into it, or the greatest status. I mean, had he won the Fountain of Youth, I think we would have been looking to try and win a grade one, because that's so important for his stallion career. But right now, we're just trying to get him back on track, and I wanted to run him in the race where he had the best chance to show himself.
And why did the Wood fall into that category?
Basically, the five weeks, and I think the proximity to Fair Hill. You know, had we gone to Keeneland, he would have had to been away from home. As it was, this was a way to get him back to Fair Hill. He could train on a track where he was familiar. Originally, I actually didn't know. We have to ship up there tomorrow. They want us on the ground 3 days before, which was a bit of a surprise to me. But, you know, at least he's had a good week back here at Fair Hill where he's had a chance to kind of gather himself and get back on track.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Tom.
Our next question comes from the line of Debbie Arrington of Sacramento Bee. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you very much for coming on this morning. Irish War Cry was, you know, just absolutely thrilling the way he won the Holy Bull Stakes. What sort of horse is he like around the barn, and, you know, what sort of personality does he have?
Yeah, he's become quite a handful around the barn. I mean, you certainly know that he's a three-year-old colt. But I do find, you know, a lot of these three-year-olds at this time of year get like that. You know, he's very sensible on the track. He's a horse that anyone could ride. But he is a little bit of a handful around the barn. You have to watch him.
Is he a nipper? Does he tend to bite?
Yeah, he tends to nip, especially if you show up without peppermints. He will tend to nip.
And Irish War Cry is kind of a mouthful of a name, but what do you call him around the barn?
We haven't got to giving him a clever name yet, so he still just goes by his real name.
Okay. And it's been probably something about Irish. That's okay. And it's been such a wide open year this year. It seems like it could be anybody's race coming into the Derby. Besides your horse, who have you been really watching?
Well, look, obviously Ian's horse that runs in the Bluegrass on Saturday has been really impressive. He hasn't done much wrong. It's always a concern when you miss a race, but I wouldn't be surprised if that ends up being a blessing in disguise. And I think any of Todd's group, the winner of the Florida Derby was extremely impressive. I mean, he's managed his horses so well. I think, everyone has to respect the horses that Todd could lead over there for sure.
Very good. Well, best of luck.
Okay. Thank you very much, Debbie.
We will now take our next question from John White of Santa Anita. Please go ahead.
Graham, I was wondering if you could describe Irish War Cry just physically and what maybe his best attributes are physically, and if you could maybe compare him, his physical appearance versus Animal Kingdom, what similarities, maybe what differences the two would have along those lines.
Yeah, Irish War Cry is very athletic. He would be a much leaner sort of more athletic type than Animal Kingdom was at this stage of the game. Animal Kingdom was a very stout, very stocky three-year-old. This horse is much more sleek, much more, he's kind of a narrower horse. Having said that, he's beautifully put together. He's very correct. And I think probably his stride is one of his biggest assets. I think when he settles into his stride, he has a very powerful and long stride, which is a big part of why he's good, I think.
Thank you, Graham, very much.
Okay, thank you, John.
And we'll take our next question from Ed McNamara of Newsday. Please go ahead.
Hi, Graham. The past 4 years, the favorite has won the Derby, and from 1980 to 99, no favorite won the Derby. A lot of people think that the institution of the point system, as opposed to the earnings, which included two-year-old earnings, is a major reason for that, considering a lot of sprint types are no longer in the Derby. Would you agree with that?
I mean, I think it's certainly possible. I mean, it's one thing that has changed, that there's nothing else that's changed about the Derby or the way it's handled, so it certainly makes sense. I mean, I think it's pretty remarkable, to be honest, because it is such a difficult race to win. It's such a race about having good trips and such. So, maybe these last three or four three-year-olds were just really good colts and better than the rest of them, but it is a surprise, and I do think the point system has worked well in that regard, and I must say I was a little skeptical about it.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, Ed, thank you.
There are no further questions. At this time, you may continue.
Graham, there's just one other storyline I wanted to touch on with you, and that's owner and breeder Isabel De Tomaso, who is such a fascinating story. For those that aren't aware, I mean, her story has been told in the racing media, but I'm just curious for those that aren't aware, if you could just, give us a little taste of her background and what you know of her, just to help get that out there.
Yeah, I mean, Isabel's a fascinating lady who's been very successful on her own right with motorsports, with Formula race cars, I believe. She must have been one of the few ladies to participate in that sport back in her heyday, and actually I think that's part of the reason why she ended up moving to Italy, so she could compete in car racing, because as a woman at that stage of the game, I think it was probably somewhat frowned upon, I would imagine. So, she's a fascinating lady, very successful in car racing and in developing cars, and it really is a great story. And she's such a pleasure to train for. I don't talk to her very often because when I do call her, she says, "What's wrong?" So she's made it very easy for me. And I would love to do well for her. I mean, she's, you want to do well for all your owners, but somebody like her, you certainly want to have the success for.
And I understand that she actually came up with the mating that produced Irish War Cry.
Absolutely, yes, that is true. And I've trained the offspring of this mare now for three or four years, at least. So.
Fantastic. And does she come to the races? Is there any chance she'll be in New York on Saturday?
I think it's unlikely she'll be at the Wood, but certainly if we get to Kentucky, I think she'll be there.
Very good. Well, Graham, thank you so much for all this information and all of your time, as always, and best of luck on Saturday.
Okay, no go, Jim. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Graham Motion, trainer of Irish Warcry, looking to rebound in the Wood Memorial at Aqueduct on Saturday. Next up, we are delighted to welcome in Ian Wilkes, the trainer of undefeated McCracken. He's 4-for-4 with 20 Derby points from two graded stakes wins, but he's been off since the Sam Davis at Tampa in February because of what Wilkes described as an ankle strain. He's the 7-to-5 morning line favorite in the Bluegrass, which was drawn just a short while ago at Keeneland. Ian Wilkes, it's Jim Maldenhill from the NTRA here. Appreciate you coming on our call.
Thanks, Jim. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. McCracken has had three works at Keeneland now. Brian Hernandez has said he's more focused than ever. Why don't you just tell us your take on where he's at right now?
I couldn't be any happier where he is right now. In his works, in the mental state of the horse, you know, he's a very happy horse, and he's liking his, where he's at. His works have been just exceptional. I've been very, very pleased in the way he's done them, the way he's galloped out, and how he's come back from them. So I'm very happy where he's at.
Oh, we're very happy to hear that. You know, this is such a solid bluegrass field on paper, not a huge field, but very accomplished. And I'm thinking that might be a good thing for McCracken, considering he's only had one race this year. As you're thinking about the Derby and beyond, is it time for him to maybe face some adversity before he gets back to Churchill Downs?
Yeah, I think you're correct. You know, I don't have a problem. I want a solid race in him. I want a good race in his horse. I think he needs it. And that's why I was originally looking for three races for him. But, you know, things happen. And you take him in your stride and move on. So with all that said, yeah, I'm looking to get a really, really good race in this horse. It doesn't mean that I have to win it. But, yeah, I'd love to win the Bluegrass. That's such a prestigious race. But I want to get the right kind of race in this horse where he gets something out of this, move in the right direction, because, you know, he's like everyone, our goal is the next race.
Yeah, that makes sense. And, you know, just to make sure everyone's saying the most correct thing, I read you describe the minor injury as an ankle strain. Is that in your mind the best way to describe it, or how would you describe most accurately what the issue was that caused him to miss the Tampa Bay Derby?
Yeah, I think you're 100% right in what you said there. That it was very minor. It was a case like I could have ran the horse, I could have run him in the Tampa Bay Derby, but the whole issue is the whole issue with it all was the horse had taken care of me. It was my turn to take care of him, and I couldn't get the right kind of work I wanted for the Tampa Bay Derby, so I just felt it was in the best interest to skip that and just let that, it was just minor, but let it get right and then go forward with him and progress on.
Very good. Well, we're happy to hear that. Ian, hang on the line and we'll see what the media has for you.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question, please signal by pressing *1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, press *1 to ask a question. We'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for questions. We will go ahead with Mr. Ron Slatter of VSIN. Please go ahead.
Hey, Ian. Looking back at Sam Davis, you look at the field, it looked pretty stout in hindsight. How would you regard that race, not only against his previous three races, but against all the other three-year-old races you've seen so far this winter?
I think it was the form has held up pretty good out of that race. The horses have come back and been consistent. They haven't, you know, dropped by the wayside. You look at Tappert's come back and won the Tampa Bay Derby and was impressive doing it. You look at State of Honor come back. He finished third, then I think he runs second, and then he come back and runs second in the Florida Derby. So the form's been consistent out of it, so you have to be pleased to see that.
And in terms of making a move toward the Derby, I mean, how much would this mean to you personally? You've obviously, working previously with Carl with Street Sense and going back before that with Unbridled, what would it mean to you for your career to have not just a Derby horse, but a Derby horse that's highly regarded, right?
Oh, it means a lot. The Derby's the race. That's the pinnacle of our racing is the Derby. I've been very fortunate to win a Breeders' Cup Classic, but when you meet people, they don't ask you if you won a Breeders' Cup Classic. They ask you if you won a Kentucky Derby. That's the race that everyone knows that doesn't know racing.
And in particular, back in Australia, I mean, I suppose, is it the same sort of feeling there in terms of accomplishment, or do you find maybe, you know, there's still that look at dirt racing versus turf racing, and you kind of have to explain it to them?
No, the Derby's the Derby. It's like in Australia, the Melbourne Cup is the Melbourne Cup, and they regard the Derby very highly as well, and you know, the Melbourne Cup's a race that stops the nation. They think of it, and they do watch it. You know, we see it and watch it, and they know who wins.
And finally, just on breeding for McCracken, obviously by a, you know, former U.S. champion, Ghost Zapper and all, can you just take us through a little bit of that, particularly the bottom side breeding?
He's out of a sick in the gold mare, Ivory Empress, Mrs. Witham, and goes back. I think she's out of Madame Pandit. And Mrs. Witham has bred, I think it goes all the way back. I think she bred the Grand Dam and the Great Grand Dam. I think she did it all. And it just, wow, you know, what do you say? Here's a lady, a family that has 8 to 10 broodmares, and to generation after generation to come with a horse like this, that tells you a lot about her breeding program.
Thank you, Ian. Good luck, safe travels, and see you at Churchill.
Thanks, Nate. Appreciate it.
Our next question comes from the line of Art Wilson of the Los Angeles Daily News. Please go ahead.
Yeah, Ian, on paper, most people think that the race on Saturday is the toughest Derby prep race to date. What's your feelings on that? Do you like the fact that he figures on paper to get tested, or would you rather his stiffest test come in the Kentucky Derby?
No, I don't mind this being a stiff test, a little tougher test, because I think you have to be a little battle-tested. You don't want to go into the Derby being underdone, not ready, knowing what to handle. I want him to be able to handle these horses. I think horses get better running against good competition. You get better against that type of, you know, sorry for repeating, against better competition. You just improve. You've got to get better. Same with the horse. They have to get better every time you step up. If I just run him against easier competition, he gets a different kind of fitness when you run against these type of horses. That's what I'm trying to say. You've got to get that fitness level up to Derby level. And I want a good race in him. I want a solid race.
Right. And going into these final Derby preps, it looks like it's wide open. Besides McCracken, your horse, who are some of the other horses around the country that have kind of caught your attention?
Yeah, you know what? They're all good. You've got to beat them all. Whoever lines up against you, you've got to beat them. The only thing, and I've learned from Carl Nasker, I've learned from him, is just stay focused on your own horse. Don't worry about what the other horses are or what they're doing or anything. if you stay focused on your horse, don't mess him up. That's what he tells me.
Okay, great. Good luck on Saturday, Ian.
Thanks.
Our next question comes from Debbie Arrington of Sacramento Bee. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you very much for coming on today. McCracken, he was just brilliant as a two-year-old, and now, you know, he was very impressive in the Sam Davis, of course, too. How much has he matured from age two to age three?
I think he's matured a lot, especially when I didn't want to miss a race, but when I missed the race, I think he's a bigger, stronger horse now. I think in the long run, you know, at the time I didn't like it, but in the long run it might have been a blessing because this horse is just mentally, physically has matured, and I just like what I'm seeing from the horse right now.
And how big of a horse is he?
I think he's about 16 hands. He's a well-balanced horse. He's tremendously balanced, and you can see from his works how he just glides over the ground. And that's the impressive thing about it. He looks bigger than 16 when he runs.
He does. Watching him from out here, yes, he does look like he's bigger. what sort of personality does he have?
Too intelligent. Sometimes I think he's too intelligent. He's quite funny. He's got loves his food, loves eating. You can't be late giving him his food because he gets to holler and scream and he wants his food. It doesn't matter whether he works, jogs, or walks, he wants it. And he's quite funny. He's getting a little cheeky now, so he needs a good race.
Very good. Best of luck.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Larry Stooms of San Francisco Chronicles. Please go ahead.
Hi, Ian. The Kentucky Derby, you know, such a hard race to win, and it's so unique that most people think going into it, you can't have any kind of setbacks at all. Otherwise, it's going to be very, very hard. What do you think about McCracken being able to overcome the little setback that he had?
Yeah, you're exactly right. Timing is everything. I was fortunate enough to watch Unbridled. Everything went right with him. I watched Street Sense. Everything went right with him. But the good thing with McCracken was if I didn't have the set race in the Sam Davis, yeah, I would have been in trouble. I'll be honest. This would have been a task I don't think I could have overcome. But having that race and not missing a lot with him, I think I'm fine because I really haven't missed any timing with him. It's just I just delayed the race a little bit.
Okay, thanks, Ian.
You're welcome.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. And we'll go ahead with our next question from Tom Gicha of the Sun Sentinel. Please go ahead.
Yeah, Ian, you said you wanted to get a real good race into him. What exactly do you mean by that? And in his other races, especially in Tampa, I mean, he came from way back and circled the field. Is that going to be his running style, and does that concern you when you start getting into bigger fields?
No, it won't concern me getting in the bigger field into the Derby and that. I'm going to leave it to Brian on Saturday. Where he wants to be, he doesn't have to be anywhere in particular. He doesn't have to be 8 lengths out of it. He doesn't have to be on the lead. He can be anywhere you want to be. I think it's going to just develop when the gates open. You have to, in this kind of race, in a small field, you have to trust the jockey and let the jockey ride the race. If you can't trust him, I've got the wrong job. But I feel I've got the right job. So I'm happy there. And then, he's running style in a big field. You know what makes him, apart from other horses, in a big field? He's got a great turn of foot. So he can be anywhere he wants in a big field because I think he's going to get himself out of trouble, be wherever he wants to be when you call on him.
Well, and you pretty much targeted the Bluegrass even before, certainly coming out of the Tampa races. I take it then that the downgrading from grade one meant nothing to you? Well, wasn't important.
No. No, I don't think it should have been downgraded, to be honest with you, because it's, and even the Wood shouldn't have been downgraded. They're such an instrumental part of the Kentucky Derby. They shouldn't have been downgraded, but that's not my decision. No, I just look at just using the race, going, you know, the race going to, you know, to go to the next race.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and just one last question. Does this point situation bother you? I mean, he really would have to get at least third. I mean, things that, by all rights, he certainly should get third or better, much better. But things happen in horse races. Is that a concern?
Yeah, you know, you can't think about that. If you're good enough, you're going to get it. And that's why I've always believed it. And I think, yeah, you know, if I'm good enough, I'll get the points. So, and I'll go on. And that's the way I just believe. And you've got to trust your horse and believe in him, and I do.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
There are no further questions. At this time, you may continue.
Ian, I just had one more for you. I just wanted to talk a little bit about Brian Hernandez. I mean, you guys had great success together. You kept him on Fort Larned and gave him his most important win. And then last weekend, he gets to ride Girvin in the Louisiana Derby 12 hours before he gets on McCracken. So I'm curious if there was anything he said to you after the work that made an impression on you, and whether getting to be on both of his top three-year-olds so close together gave him any special insight into how McCracken was feeling.
Well, this, boy, aren't you happy for Brian? Isn't that tremendous? You know, a lot of jocks want to be in that position. They've got two good three-year-olds. They're fortunate to ride two good three-year-olds, and you just couldn't be any more happier for Brian. And, you know, I don't put that pressure on him in asking him about Girvin, because that's not my horse. That's Joe's horse. And I wouldn't like to, I don't really want to put him in that position of, but, you know, I did say, man, he ran good. You know, that was the only thing we talked about. But I don't ask him about the horse. I don't want to know, because, like I said, I just don't want to put him in that position.
Interesting. Well, Ian, I really appreciate your time, and hopefully we'll get to talk to you again in a few weeks before the Derby, but best of luck on Saturday.
Thanks, mate. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Of course. Ian Wilkes, who's got the bluegrass favorite in McCracken, always appreciate his time. And now we're going to move on to the Santa Anita Derby, which is widely seen as completely up for grabs now that the top West Coast three-year-old Mastery has been sidelined. Doug O'Neill has won this race twice before with Golden Sense, and I'll Have Another. And, of course, he's won the Kentucky Derby twice before with I'll Have Another and Nyquist last year. He's got four probables for Saturday's Santa Anita Derby, including the San Vicente winner Iliad, who was second to Mastery last out, plus Milton Freewater, So Conflated, and Term of Art. Doug O'Neill, it's Jim Mulvihill. Thanks for joining us.
Hello, Jim. Thanks for having me.
Of course. We always appreciate your time. You've always been so generous coming on so many of these calls over the last few years. Now, first off, just to confirm, are you still expecting that you're going to enter all four of those that I just named?
That's the plan. As long as they continue to do well, we'll plan on entering all four tomorrow.
Terrific. And can you just give us your general take on the West Coast three-year-olds this year, how they stack up and how this race is coming together?
Well, you know, all four of them are extremely, you know, special individuals, and Iliad would probably have to be the top of those four at this point. But, you know, these horses change so quickly at this stage, just individually, I think all four horses deserve a chance, and we all know if you get lucky and run, you know, 1, 2, 3 in the San Diego Derby, your next stop might be the big dance in Kentucky. So all four of them are doing well.
Very good, and they all worked on Friday morning. Is there I mean, I'm sure they did well because you wouldn't enter them otherwise, but was there anything that stood out to you about any of those works, anyone that's progressing by leaps and bounds or anything about those works that's notable?
Well, you know, I think Iliad really impressed me. He's impressed me from the first day I got him, but his final work before the San Felipe was impressive, but he was by himself and maybe didn't apply himself as much, and then he got a little tired there at the end, and this past work leading up to San Diego Derby, we put a target in front of him, and Flavien Prat, who's gotten to know him better and better, just was very excited about the way the effort he put into it, the amount of ease that he did it in, and then the gallop out, the energy he showed galloping out. So I think he's coming in the San Diego Derby as good as he possibly could be. And the other three worked well. Tyler Bates came out and worked Term of Art, and you know he worked by himself. He's just such a strong, big, good-looking son of a gun who's got tons of stamina. And Tyler did a really good job. He basically went a mile around there and was really strong in the start and the finish. And then Soak Inflated and Milton Freewater put in strong works themselves. So I think all of them are coming into it in great shape and just kind of have to see how the race shapes up and how they feel that day.
Yeah, good info. Thank you. Sure. Well, let me step aside and I'll check with the operator, Angel, and we'll see what the media's got for you.
Thank you. If you'd like to ask a question, please signal by pressing *1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, press *1 to ask a question. We'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for questions. Our first question comes from the line of Art Wilson of the Los Angeles Daily News. Please go ahead.
Hey, Doug, how's it going?
Great, Art. How are you?
I'm doing good, thanks. Hey, can you remember, since you became a trainer at Time, going into the Santa Anita Derby when this race was so wide open?
Wow. You know, I got like a D in history, Art, so that's not my greatest strength. But, yeah, you know, it's very, there's a lot of depth this year, really. I guess you could look at it one way that there's no standout because maybe the group is kind of weak, but I look at it the other way. I think, you know, Nostri might have separated himself from the class if he would have stayed injury-free, but with him out, I think it's just a really deep, strong, anything-can-happen kind of year, and I think it's exciting that way, though. Last year coming in, you know, into the Kentucky Derby with undefeated horse like Nyquist, that was exciting, too.
Right. Which brings me to my next question. Do you think you would have entered as many horses in this race if Mastery hadn't been hurt?
Ooh, that's a great question. Probably not, no. I think if Mastery was running in it, Iliad would have ran for sure, but yeah, the other three might have decided to go a different route. So that his defection, I think, opened up the door to a lot of horses' thoughts that they could you know, have success come Saturday.
And looking around the rest of the country, Doug, who's kind of caught your eye as far as horses in other parts of the country going into the Derby?
Well, I know Ian was just on this the call before, and I think his horse, Ian's such a great horseman, and McCracken's been such a brilliant horse. So I think the Bluegrass is going to tell us a lot come Saturday. Todd's colt that won the Florida Derby was, you know, wow, that was incredible the way he was able to track just off the pace and explode down the lane. He's got the right style to be really tough.
Right. Okay. Well, hey, best of luck to you on Saturday, Doug.
Yeah. So it's a deep year this year. It's really deep.
We'll take our next question from Debbie Arrington of the Sacramento Bee. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, Doug, and thanks again for coming on the call. It's
gosh, it seems like forever since Nyquist left here. with this group, do any of these four remind you at all of Nyquist?
You know, I think the closest one would be Ilya, just because Nyquist had such brilliant speed and he could carry it. And Ilya kind of displays that too. He's got a lot of quickness and he displays a lot of stamina in the morning. So I think of the four, Ilya would be the one closest to Nyquist.
Mm-hmm. And Ilya, wasn't he one of the Shaw horses that kind of showed up suddenly in your barn?
No, I, honest to God, it was like a late Christmas present, getting that phone call and him sending that. That was incredible. And, you know, here comes American Gal, here comes Ilya, here comes a few promising babies, here comes, a very fortunate moment for me when that happened, and it's exciting times.
Mm-hmm. And you have another Redham horse, and So Conflated. We saw him up here in the Cal Derby, and he was very impressive. Tell me a little bit about this horse. Is he another I'll Have Another, or is he a late bloomer, or what's happening with him?
That's funny you said that. After we think of him as this I'll Have Another, and he even gallops like I'll Have Another.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's so strong on a daily basis, and, you know, he virtually 2 minute licks every day. And I was real excited about him going into the New York race. And he settled in real nice, you know, borderline quiet, but we deemed it at the time, what a mature son of a gun. And he was a flat. That trip didn't serve him right, and he just never had much energy back there, and got him back here. We ran a series of tests, and he cleared all the tests, so we just kind of refueled the tank, giving him a little time, and he's training really good. If you can put your thumb over his last race, I think, he has a chance come Saturday. So, he's going to be off the radar, if you will, prior to Saturday, but hopefully he's back on in the hunt come Saturday late afternoon.
Mm-hmm. And Milton Freewater is such an unusual name. How did that horse get that name, and what was its inspiration?
We actually purchased him after he won his debut for Dr. Mike Harrington. Trained him, and so I think he's named after a movie character, but he's just, you know, he kind of has that Gato del Sol feel to me, you know, as far as I think he's a horse that's going to want to come from off the pace, you know, the old pace makes the race. If something happens and there's a crazy meltdown early, I could see Milton pick up the pieces.
Mm-hmm. And Term of Art, is he been kind of a late bloomer for you?
You know, he's such a cool horse. He's run so many times. It's funny. When you look at him, he's got to be near 17 hands, and I don't know how he fits in a 70 sometimes. Such a tall, long horse, and he's got a beautiful mind to him, beautiful stride. And he is a horse, and when you look at him, he looks like a horse that might not even debut until he was a four-year-old, and here he's had, I think, 8 or 9 starts already. So I think he's just going to get better and better with racing, and Tyler Bayes has ridden him a few times. He loves him, and he really knows him well, and he would not shock me at all. He's got the pedigree, he's got the body, he's got the mind, he's got the continuity of the rider, and in County Men Farms, they're really heating up their three-year-olds, so hoping to add to their list of nice babies.
Very good. Best of luck on Saturday.
Thank you, Debbie.
And your next question comes from the line of Ron Flatter of VSIM. Please go ahead.
Art, what can you tell us about what was going on behind the scenes when the Shaw horses came to you this past winter, or this past fall, whenever it was?
behind the scenes? Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, that's kind of like the Wizard of Oz stuff. I don't know what else happened to Andy Clinton. I know they had a lot of success and they had a good long run. And, you know, every now and then, you know, the team breaks up a little bit and the head coach or the GM separate. And so I really don't know. And I haven't asked Talim. I just, you know, really focused on what a unbelievable opportunity it was for me to get some of the Talim Shah horses. So I'm enjoying the moment with that.
Does Iliad need to be on the lead, or do you have to kind of look at the rest of the entries to figure out who's going to be bring the speed to the race?
Oh, yeah, he does not need to lead. I mean, we actually briefed him the other day behind a horse, and he's funny around because even when he's by himself, yeah, he could go as slow as you wanted him to. So he's not doesn't have that accelerator stuck kind of mentality. He's got speed for sure, but he can definitely settle and sit off it and, you know, with Flavian getting to know him with each work and each race, it's been a huge, huge benefit for all of us to see the results move forward. So, he does not need to leave.
When Mastery won the San Felipe by 6 3/4, do you think he was 6 3/4 ahead of everybody else on the Derby trail, or do you think there's some work to do for your horse and other horses to kind of make up that ground because somebody else might be out there to assume the mantle of best Derby horse going right now?
That's a tough question. I think the amazing thing of getting a horse to the Derby is keeping him injury free through the, you know, the tournament run, if you will. And so Mastery, as brilliant as that was, he was kind of a lightly raced horse and he got bit by the injury bug. So that's so hypothetical to know where he was. But I can tell you, Iliad put in a good push, and the last 8 mile was strictly a fitness thing, and that was my fault. But he'll move way forward off that effort, and I got to learn that, you know, through his final prep going into the San Felipe, I worked him by himself, and I don't think he got enough out of that. And you could even tell, and Nyquist did this to us before, too, where when they're given everything they got in the junk, they're still trying to ask him for more. He was even swishing his tail almost as if to say to Flavian, you know, I'm doing everything I can, you know, stop hitting me. So I think I learned a lot in the defeat there, and I think we're going to move forward come Saturday.
And finally, when you look at the breeding on Iliad, certainly has something in common with McCracken, with Ghost Zapper being the sire. Do you see something in common between the two horses because of the pedigree?
Well, nah, you know, God, I think when you've got a you know, talented individuals like McCracken and Iliad, and they can call Ghost Zapper their father, that's a strong thing. So I think it really takes any kind of fluke label off either one of those two, because you know, Ghost Zapper is such a tremendous racehorse himself, and you know, his offspring have been done pretty darn well as well. So I think it puts class into both of these nice individuals.
Very good. Thanks, Doug. Good luck, and safe travels on the way to Churchill, too.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Jim Cherusny of Wall Street Journal. Please go ahead.
Hi, Doug. You know, chances are all four of your horses won't make it to the Derby. Is the consolation that missing the Derby might not be so bad for a promising horse?
Wow. I don't know. You know, I guess I never looked at it like that. But if you don't make it to the Derby, then yeah, there's multiple good results that could still come your way, you know, as you move forward. So hey, it's a challenge to get to, and I think with the point system, you know, it keeps you from really throwing the Hail Mary. You know, to get in there, you have to have had a pretty good resume. So, you know, I think if you make it there, you enjoy and you embrace the whole achievement of you know, you and your host making it that far.
Well, I mean, I asked that question because it seems like Nyquist was never quite the same after winning the Derby last year. And a horse like Araguit, for instance, didn't even make his debut until April of last year. So is there sort of, you know, kind of a parallel to that?
I don't think so. No, I think horses are human athletes where they, you know, they peak and valley in different points of their career. And you know, I know Nyquist after the Derby did seem a little deflated, even though he didn't seem like it to us, but his performances dipped, and, you know, it was obviously a result of the campaign of getting into the Derby, but he never let on, like, that he was dipping. So I think it's just something that's inexact science, and you try to know your athlete as best you can, but no matter how you think they're going into it, you know, the end results are all that matters, and you got to listen to that.
So, final question regarding that. Was there ever, you know, an evaluation sort of like after the fact of like what happened to Nyquist, and could the campaign have been run differently? You know, I mean, obviously you said the horse didn't really show that he was worn out after the Derby, but his results didn't quite, you know, weren't what they were before that.
You know, we monitor all their horses so closely, and you know, you don't lead them over there unless they're 100%. So, again, they're not machines. So as much as you'd love to have them consistently run bang-up races like humans, they sometimes aren't feeling it that particular day or that particular month or whatever. So, you know, not only are you're a horse caretaker, but you're also kind of trying to play the mental aspect of it too, and how they're feeling and their energy and that stuff. So, again, it's a real inexact science, but you do the best you can, and you'd love them to win every race and be as consistent as possible. But unfortunately, they're living beings, and they have their ups and downs.
Thanks, Doug.
You got it, Bo.
And our next question comes from the line of Tom Gicha of the Sun Sentinel. Please go ahead.
Yeah, Doug, with all the million-dollar, 100-point preps around the country these next couple of weeks, did you ever consider sending any of these four out of town, or is this an instance where, you know, the race is here and I've got four horses that fit it, why not just run them all?
Yeah, you know, I think it was like that, Tom. It's not going to fit in our own backyard, was such a blessing, and, you know, traveling, if you're not one of the favorites, traveling, not only is it expensive, but it can be a little, take a little toll on your horse too. So, you know, the less you can do it, and even though, you know, a couple of our four might be outsiders, you know, you'd rather be outsiders in your own backyard if they're doing well than to take them outside of their natural surroundings and be an outsider. So I think it was just easiest that way.
All right, and this I hadn't planned to ask, but a kind of reaction to the last question about Nyquist and winning the Derby. You've won the Derby and you've won scores of other big races, but winning the Derby is still the thing, isn't it? I mean, you'll trade everything else for winning the Derby. I don't mean everything. I mean,
Excuse me. Yeah, no, I think so. And, you know, I think if he hosts the talk, they might say the same thing because, you know, you watch. You know, the two horses that we were so blessed to win the Derby with, and just the way they handled it was just, I mean, it made the hair on the back of your neck rise, you know.
Okay, well, thank you.
We'll We'll go ahead with our next question from Jay Privman of Daily Racing Forum. Please go ahead.
Is Doug still there or did he cut out? That was my fear.
Thank you, Ben.
Doug, are you there?
Connected.
Yep.
Can you hear me now? There we go. I have two questions. First off, how many horses do you have for Calumet, Doug?
For Calumet, we have four, Jay.
And then sort of a follow-up on the question that was just asked, but more from a wider standpoint. Obviously, when you're training horses, it's, you know, you're constantly moving forward and training and working. But with the success that you've had winning two derbies in the last 4 years, do you ever sit back and kind of appreciate what an accomplishment that is?
Well, you know, I think the beauty of the sport is you're always in the now because there's always something going on, good and bad. But being blessed with good friends and a family, there's many evenings where you're reminiscing about the amazing horses that we've been blessed to be part of. So yeah, there's been a few times where we enjoy the heck out of the two Derby wins, that's for sure.
And then I've had a number of trainers say that you don't know what it's like to win the Derby until you win it, but that once you've won it, it's almost like having that feeling again is what kind of keeps you going to win another one. Have you sort of experienced that yourself, or is that not the case for you specifically?
I don't think it's the case for me specifically. We got lucky enough and won a maiden 30 the other day after I was named My Man Chuckles, and we named him after a good friend of ours named Chuck Navarro that just passed away. And that win moved me and a lot of my buddies to, almost to tears because of what that horse means to us. And when we look at the horse, we think of our buddy. And so, I think it's the Derby is unbelievable, no doubt about it. But, these horses are unbelievable. And when you bond with them and then you see them compete and they give everything they've got and there's, a win involved, it's that in itself is pretty amazing.
Great. Thank you, Doug. Good luck.
You got it. Thank you, Jeff.
Our next question comes from the line of Danny Brewer of HorseRacingScoop.com. Please go ahead.
Hey, Dougie. How's it going, man?
Good. Tennessee Volunteers, baby. How you doing today?
Doing great. Hey, let's talk about Iliad, this San Vicente. What kind of performance was that from? Because he just come into your barn and just romped. How about that? And where's he gone from there to now, you think?
Well, thank you, Dan. Yeah, he was a horse that just came over to us in great shape, and I was just trying to stay out of his way and let him continue to blossom. And yeah, that was so exciting. It was such a big win. And as we got him ready to stretch him out with San Felipe, he ran a really solid race, but just came up a little bit empty on the end. And I'm pretty optimistic that we're going to see more oomph to him late come Saturday and be fun to watch.
Do you think that he is continuing to mature both physically and mentally right now?
I think he is, Danny. Yeah, he's always been a very mature horse, both in physically and mentally, and I think he just needed a little help stamina wise, and as these races keep farther, you just gotta, as a trainer, you gotta make sure they've got as much air as they can handle, and I think we're feeling good at this point.
The Kaleem Shaw connection, I know he's knocked on the Derby door a few times. You're excited for him to have a horse like this with an opportunity again?
Oh, big time. I mean, Kaleem's put a lot of money in the sport. He loves the sport. He's had a lot of success in the sport. And, it would be really cool to be part of, a successful Derby campaign with Kaleem. And I know he would mean everything to him. You know, other than his family, you know, horses are right up there in his daily life, and you know, he loves them, and so it would mean a lot.
I guess it kind of maybe depends on the family, whether it's horses first or family first, right? Depends on the day, maybe. Maybe I don't need to touch that one.
depends on the
family.
It's family first, for sure, for coming.
Yes, sir. You're absolutely right. Hey, I appreciate it, Doug, man. I wish you the best of luck, okay?
You too, brother. Thanks, Dave.
Thanks.
There are no further questions at this time. You may continue.
Doug, last question for me. It's incredible to have four shots in a $1 million race, but I'm also curious about the dynamics of having four different owners. Is this a tough spot, knowing that even if you're lucky enough to win the race, you're still going to be beating three of your other owners, and especially if one of the other three were to jump up and beat Iliad? How do you manage all that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's one of those where you try to just individualize it in the fact that I think each one of the four has every right to go into the gate, you know, with a legitimate chance. And the nice thing is I don't have two dynamite speed horses. That always gets a little challenging when you're, you know, then you got to kind of weigh on the post position draw and the jockey strategize and stuff. I think in this scenario where you got four talented,
well, dang, that was getting interesting. I think we lost it, Doug.
I believe he hung up. Let's see if we can get him back on. It's the participants that disconnected. But Doug is still on.
Well,
can you hear us?
Doug, are you there?
His line still shows us connected.
Maybe he just stepped out of range. Doug O'Neill, are you around? Maybe we should just leave well enough alone. That was the last question, and if he doesn't pop back up here, then we'll just let it go. Last call for Doug O'Neill. Doug, are you there? Oh, my goodness. Somebody's there. Doug. No. All right. Well, we're just going to let that go. No, we're not going to call him back just to get the second half of the answer to my last question. We've gone over anyway, and Doug's always been so generous with his time. So we'll just wrap it up and say that'll do it for this teleconference. My thanks to Doug, to Grand Motion, to Ian Wilkes. Thanks also to Joan Lawrence for lining up all these great guests. You can find an audio file of this call later today on our website, and then the transcript will be up there tomorrow. And if you need help finding any of that, just give myself or Joan a ring, and we'll be back with you next week to talk about the last two big Derby prep races. Now back to our operator, Angel, to wrap it up.
Thank you. This concludes today's call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect your line and have a wonderful day. Hi, Ms. Lawrence. Are you still on?
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much. Thank you.
We have Mr. O'Neill's line is still connected up till now,
yeah,
but he just went out of range
somewhere. I just texted him. So.
Oh, that's what happened? He was out of range?
Probably. That's what happened. He's in California, and he sounded like, you know, he's on his cell phone, so he might have walked out of cell range.
Okay.